Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies Frosses. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Print Supplies keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies helps save your business time and money. Email sales at printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Hello and welcome to this week's Business Matters on Highland Radio. I'm Chris Ashmore. Later in the programme, I'll be talking with Steve Fraser, Managing Director of City of Derry Airport. The airport is going through a period of growth, and we'll be talking about why this has been happening, the new Derry to Dublin service that is due to start in October, and the outlook for the next few years. But first, I want to tell you about a Donegal business success story. Orla Vera is a luxury, sustainable accessories brand. It's based in Buncrana. It was founded by Orla O'Hagan several years ago, and it all came about in a rather roundabout fashion. She had gone to university in Leicester, worked for a time in London. Who knows where she could have ended up? COVID came along, came back home, and the business was born. So a very interesting story to tell, and the company going from strength to strength. Delighted to say that Orla O'Hagan is joining me on Business Matters this week. Orla, a great story. First of all, let's just tell people a little bit about your business. And in particular, I suppose it's one of the real unique selling points about it. You specialize in handcrafted products made from recycled leather, and basically you're promoting the whole sustainability story.
Yes, we are. I own Orla Vera Accessories. We are based in Buncrana, and you're right that we specialise in handmade, sustainably made leather accessories, handbags and small leather goods. Basically we take dead stock leather from factories that are basically, or leather, like there's nothing really wrong with it, but there might be like an odd scratch or a hole, or maybe like a mark from like barbed wire on a cow or sorry, on a horse, or that the factories can't really use when they're like digitally cutting things. The cutters don't pick it up. So we basically take those skins that they can't use, and we then can work around them, because obviously we work on like smaller pieces. So yeah, that is basically a sum up of what we do.
And look, no harm in a bit of name dropping. I know in the past you've actually got some of the leather from the likes of BMW and Rolls Royce. So you've obviously gone out and made a lot of contacts with people who have leather as some part of their chain in their business.
Yeah, well, I think I worked in the industry for a couple of years, and when I was actually at university in Leicester, I studied footwear design over there, and then I went on to London and I designed luxury shoes for a few years. And I think doing that and like dealing with factories and like you're constantly making connections, I actually got a really great contact with a leather merchant, and he then put me in contact with these factories. So Rolls-Royce, BMW and Mulberry was a few of the factories that we've worked with in the past, and Dr. Martens as well. We've worked with their factory as well. So we're really lucky to have just great contacts and great connections, but I think it is just kind of experience over the years, and we've been getting quite lucky to meet people that I could kind of reach out to then along the way when I started it up.
Now tell me, just let's rewind the clock a little bit. Having left school, you made the decision to go to university in Leicester. What was your dream at that stage?
When I finished like secondary school, I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to do something really creative. I've always been very, very creative. Whenever I finished school, I just didn't know, when my friends were going to different colleges in Ireland doing like courses that I would never ever do, like just non-creative stuff. So I kind of felt a bit lost and I didn't know what to do. So I did the 1 year foundation course in the Northwest Regional College, the art course in there, and it kind of gives you a bit of a taster into loads of different creative areas. And then from that there, after that year, I applied to a footwear design course in England, and I got into then De Montfort University in Leicester. So I went there for 3 years and studied footwear design over there. But then whenever I got, so when I finished college, I got a job in London designing like luxury footwear for Sophia Webster. And once I was there, I worked across her accessories team as well, designing handbags and shoes. So I kind of really found a love then for handbags at that stage.
And tell us, so working for a big name like Sophia Webster, a great experience, living in London, life was good, lots happening, exciting. Little did you know at that stage that a few years later you'd be going back to Donegal.
I know, and actually I loved my job there. I really, really did. I feel like once I, that was like one of my dream places to work. And then once I applied and I got in, like I really actually couldn't believe that I was working there. I really, really loved my job. But once COVID hit, I got made redundant. So I came home, was at the very beginning of COVID. I think it was the end of March I got made redundant, and I came home and I thought I'd be home for like 2 weeks, you know, and just get another job and move back. Like I didn't even give up my flat or anything. So I came home for a bit of like what I thought was like a holiday, and then COVID didn't, was not like a holiday at all. So yeah. I had to give up my flat, and sure, nowhere was hiring. Because I know all of my friends around the kind of similar age as me were obviously like entry level jobs at that time, so we were the first out, and nowhere was hiring. So when I did move home, I had like a leather sewing machine that I bought off my lecturer when I was in college, and I had like leather left over from university, and I just kind of started to make stuff like in my spare time, because you know I was at nothing, and as lucky as we are to walk the beach every day, but there's only so many times you can do that in a day. So I kind of had to keep myself busy. And then through that, then I kind of found my love for kind of hand making stuff. And once I started to post on Instagram, then it just kind of took off. And I gave up the idea then of looking for jobs to move back to London and just thought I'd give it a go here.
And were you aware from an early stage, you know, that there was a lot of waste produced, companies using leather, that there was a fair proportion that they weren't able to use? Tell us how the contacts came about to actually get that leather.
Because I was always so interested in fashion and like shoes and bags and just like shopping in general. But you do, obviously, this past number of years, everyone is hyper aware of the waste and the amount of waste that fast fashion produces. And then when I was like, you know, fresh out of college and I got into this job and I was speaking to people who had been in the industry for years, and they were then telling me that they had worked for obviously fast fashion companies and luxury companies, and the difference in, you know, harnessing what you have compared to like the throwaway culture that people had, which I do think is changing. And even like for every age, I do think that outlook on clothes and everything is changing, especially with like the rise of vintage and Depop and that. But I do just think I was always kind of hyper aware because I always had a big interest in it anyway. But then when we were actually in university, we used to get these offcuts of leather and skins from these bigger companies, and that's how we would make our, because it was a footwear design course, so we were making shoes, and then that's how we would make our shoes, was out of these leather offcuts, because obviously the university didn't want to be paying like a couple of hundred euro for a skin of leather, so they were getting it, how, you know, through their contacts. And then once I started up, then I knew exactly who to contact then.
So we're experiencing the whole COVID-19 pandemic, you're back in Buncrana. At what stage did you sort of start thinking to yourself, well, look, maybe this is the future for me. I can establish a business myself from here.
To be honest, I always had the notion of going back to London. Like I was always like, oh, do you know what? I'll just like, you know, I'll give this a go till September, and then come, you know, kind of stay here for the summer, and then COVID will be gone in September and I'll go back to London and like go back to like getting a job or whatever. And it just never happened, and COVID kind of stuck around. And once then, I think as well, because of COVID, and nobody could do anything. People couldn't go on holidays. They couldn't, you know, go to the pub or do, you know, do their things they would normally do every week. Everyone has, you know, a wee bit of spare money about them. So I was just like making these handbags and posting them on Instagram, and I feel like people were treating themselves then, and it was like a local person that was doing it, and people wanted to support local. So I think then with people's like a wee bit of spare money that they had, they were like, okay, you know, I'll take that and that colour, that and that colour, whatever. And once that happened, and I kind of had a, you know, I was taking orders then for Christmas come September. People were starting then to like paying for stuff, and you know, I was like, I'll get one for my daughter and my friend or whatever. So I had this like list of orders for Christmas, and I thought, you know what, I'll do this for Christmas, and if it doesn't work out, then after Christmas I'll apply. And it was like the last weekend of November, and I got a message from one of the buyers from Michael Honey's, and she had asked would I be interested in stocking them for Christmas. And I feel like once I got that message, it gave me a wee bit of like
Great break, yeah.
Kind of like validation of like, okay, you know what? I'm obviously doing this myself, but someone else thinks this is really good, so sure, I'll give it a go. And I was like, once I actually think I seen it on like the shop floor of Michael Honey's, I was like, you know what? I better stop applying for jobs in London and really put my head into this now, because I don't think it's going away anytime soon. So
now, tell me about the range of products. And at the beginning, did you... Was it one-off items that you were making, or were you doing one design and copying it and doing it again and again, or what was the situation?
No, at the beginning, I actually would even say for the first like 2 years, all I did was the exact same bag in different colours. So I would just make the pattern, and then it was literally just it is still our main seller today. Now we do loads of different styles, but for the first 2 years, we literally did one style in different colours. And because the offcuts and the skins that I was getting was so limited, I might only get one bag out of one skin. So like, people love, and I do think they still do, love the notion that they're getting, you know, one thing, and there's only one in the world, and it's just them that has it. So I think that was a huge selling point as well for us at the beginning, that they were getting something that no one else has.
And it's a premium product. What about the price range? Was it difficult to sort of decide what you would sell it at? Because you obviously, you have to make a living out of it, but you don't want to pitch it too high, too low, just getting it sort of at that right price point. Was that difficult?
It was hard, because I think I never had any experience in doing that. And I also didn't know what to charge for my time. And I didn't know, like, obviously I was so lucky that like I was just doing it from home. I didn't have any overheads at all apart from getting the leather. Do you know, my time was nothing. We have a lot more now, but like, that was my overhead at the start. So once I kind of got a grip on that and thought, okay, if I actually want to make this work and this is my job and this is like, I need to make a living out of this, I think once I kind of decided and worked out what I needed to charge. But my thing was, though, I wanted, at the time, I think in 2020 as well, the whole sustainable movement was happening. And when I looked at eco-friendly and recyclable materials and recyclable products, everything had a recycled look about it. Everything was quite dull. Whereas I wanted to make something eco-friendly, but actually make it quite cool. It's something you would want to wear. So I really wanted to make a sustainable product that was accessible as well for everybody. So I think we started off, I think, at €90 for a handbag, and that included your strap as well. Whereas now, with the past few years, it's gone up a wee bit, but it's not, it's €100 is our main seller. And that would get you like your Vera style, which is our best seller, in whatever color, whatever hardware, whatever strap. It's totally customizable to you. You can like design it, and we will make it in our workshop here in Moncrana. And I think if you were to go to like a really luxury store in London or Dublin and get a handbag using the same leather that we're using, you would be paying a couple of €100 because of the quality of the leather is that good.
The name Orla Vera Accessories, I can guess where the Orla comes from, but the Vera, elaborate.
No, that is my name.
Well, Was that always your intention to call it Orla Vera Accessories, or did you toy about with different names, or did you feel, you know, this is my name, let's brand it?
Not really. Well, whenever I did my final show in uni, we had to like put our brand in on our shoes. So it was just like, oh, I'll just do Orla Vera because it's my middle name. But once then I kind of set up and I had to create an Instagram, and I already had my own Instagram of like Orla O'Hagan. I was like, okay, sure, I'll just use that and that'll do, because I always say I never meant to start a business. It was always just, sure, that'll do and that'll keep me going. Whereas when it actually took off, it was like, all right, okay, we have to stick with this now.
Now, tell me a little bit about your workshop. So at the beginning, everything was done at home, but then you got busier and busier. You needed a bit of space. So what happened next?
So God love my daddy. I have totally taken over his garage and turned it into a workshop. So we have like upstairs and downstairs now in my dad's garage at the back of my mum and dad's house. So it's so handy because they actually live like 2 minutes off the main street in Buncrana walking. So we're in a great location for anybody that's in Buncrana can just walk down and collect or design their handbag. But we've now, yeah, taken over his garage completely, and we've got like a bit more machinery, and we're still, everything's very much done by hand, but we do have now a wee bit of extra machinery that can speed things up a wee bit.
As you've expanded, have you had to finance this all yourself? Is there support from local agencies?
I haven't had any funding. I have funded it myself with just my wages and my savings. But there definitely is support. Like the local enterprise office is great for like starting up a business. They definitely do. And I think over the years, it's really come on of what you can get now starting up a business from local enterprise office.
Well, I'm sure it's probably all the more satisfying that you've done so much yourself. And as you've expanded and developed more products, have you employed other people as well?
Yeah, so I have three girls here. So yeah, we have expanded. I definitely needed a bit of help along the way.
Being online, your goods can go anywhere in the world. Are there certain shops and places that your products are going to on a regular basis?
Yeah, well, we're mainly online. We don't really sell to shops at the minute, but we are mainly online. And then from our workshop here, a lot of people would just call in. But we have our website. So once then I post on Instagram or TikTok, like our new product or like a video of like our top 10 or top 3 that we have at the minute, I always then have the link and the accessibility to the website, and then everything just kind of goes from there. But then from the website, we do ship worldwide. Ireland is absolutely number one, and in the Northwest. And then after that would be Australia and America. We would sell a lot of product. Like we would ship a lot of product to Australia.
You also have expanded. Tell me a little bit about the bridal accessories that you're doing as well now.
So our bridal came about, a girl from Buncrana was actually getting married, and she just called in one day and says, like, you know, can you just make me a white bag for my hen party, and then I can use it on my wedding day just to hold my, you know, my phone and my lipstick, and I don't need anything big, just whatever. And I was like, yeah, of course, no problem. So I got a few like white leather samples that I could get, and she matched them up with her dress, and that was grand. And then she got her like professional photographer photos back and had tagged me in them. And next thing you know, like a few weeks later, it was like, you know, someone else looking for one and someone else looking for one. And then it was after Christmas, and then you're coming into like the wedding season, really. From there's a lot of hen parties that happen in that midterm at the end of February. So we all of a sudden then had a lot of requests for white bags for the end of February. And then people wanted them then for hen parties in May, for then get married in June. And I was like, you know what, like, let's just do a bridal range for the summer and see how it goes. And we started that, I think, 2 years ago now, and it really took off. Now, at the time, we were just doing leather, so it was just white leather bags, whereas now we have expanded into, like, satin, lace, embroidery, sequin, basically whatever you want we'll do in your bridal style. We do have then, like, just our styles online. And because, as well, they're not leather, they're, like, slightly cheaper as well. So they're all available on our website as well at the minute.
So things are going well. If you look ahead, where would you like to see things in 3 or 5 years' time from now?
I think, to be honest, I would love to get into a few more shops. I would love our bridal, take it into like bridal boutiques and have that accessibility and people being able to link whenever they're shopping for their dress or their hen party outfit or their day after outfit, to have that accessibility of our range being there and just being to hand that you can pick it up on the day. So we are working towards kind of mainstreaming our bridal as well. And I think that would be like an amazing option. I think as well, like I'm that age where all of my friends are getting married and I'm just constantly getting sent, you know, bridal info and bridal. Whereas I think when I started this, bridal wasn't even on my radar. So I think the bridal will definitely expand in the bridal in the next few years, because it is like, it is doing quite well for us, thank God. And then with our main range, then I think we'll just, our constant aim is just to improve on our quality and try and keep our accessible price point. So for example, like this winter, now this autumn winter, we're experimenting with like fringing and studs and trying to keep in with the current trends and what's going to be popular, so that we can stay like very trendy and very on trend, but still being a sustainable product.
If people want to get an idea of the range and to find out more, just give me the details of your website and where they can find you online.
Yeah. So you can find us on Facebook, Instagram and TikTok, and it's at Orla Vera Accessories. And then our website is orlaveraaccessories.com. And yeah, you can find me there. Our email is orlaveraaccessories@gmail.com if anyone wants to contact me there. And our workshop is in Buncrana, and all our details is online as well, but where that is, and our opening hours as well.
Great. And just to conclude, good news for you of late, Orla Vera Accessories, one of 121 Irish businesses that have been shortlisted for the 10th annual Irish Made Awards. They take place at the end of September. So nice to be on this shortlist. And when you get that sort of recognition, it's good for you, I suppose, from a morale point of view and satisfaction, but it's also heightening the profile of the business.
Absolutely. Do you know what? I got the email through last week, and it was a total feel good. Oh, like, isn't that great to be recognised? And there's such amazing businesses that we're up against. But even just to get this far now, I think like all my category is the sustainability category, and there's only 12 of us. So even to get into that top 12 is just amazing, you know, from businesses all over Ireland, especially also we turn up here in Donegal. You know, sometimes people kind of forget about us. So it's great to get that recognition. I'm going to ask your listeners now, I'm going to be wild cheeky and ask, you can go on and vote for us on the Irish Made Awards. It's
Irish Country Magazine, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, the Irish Country Magazine. You can vote online, and the link is up as well on my Facebook and my Instagram. If anyone would like to go and vote, it only takes like 20 seconds just to do, and we would really appreciate it.
Well, we wish you luck on that. And just in conclusion, for anybody who maybe has a passion or is starting out and looking at a career ahead, if you have a gut feeling about something, would your message be to go for it, or what would you say?
Oh, I think absolutely go for it. Like, what have you got to lose? And then the day, if it doesn't work out, you can always try again or just like do something else. I think I'm so lucky to have gotten this far. You know, I'm this far in now, and at the time, sure, I thought I was only going to do it for 2 weeks, and then it was the summer, and then it was to Christmas, and then all of a sudden, you know, we're this far in. And like last year I went off maternity leave, and I went off for 4 months and had our wee boy, and you know, I was able to keep the business going in the background of doing all that. And I just think I would be back now and, you know, a job that I might not like, whereas I just gave it a go and gave it my all, and sure, it really paid off now. So now I'm so delighted that I did it. And if anyone's on the same boat as me thinking, well, I won't die, sure, just give it a go.
Well, my thanks to Orla O'Hagan, founder of Orla Vera Accessories in Buncrana. After the break, I'll be finding out why passenger numbers are soaring at City of Derry Airport.
Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Principalise Frosses. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Principalise keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. Principalise helps save your business time and money.
Welcome back to Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Passenger numbers at City of Derry Airport have been rising at a faster rate than any other airport in Ireland over the past year. Admittedly, they are still some way off the peak figures back in 2008, but last year the passenger numbers were up by 23%, and the figures for the first 6 months of this year are up 16.3% on the first 6 months of 2025. With more flights on the way, including a Derry to Dublin service, the outlook is very positive. Well, Steve Fraser is the managing director at City of Derry Airport, and when I spoke to him, I began by putting it to him that these are indeed very encouraging figures.
Yeah, Chris, very positive, very welcome. All passenger numbers going in the right direction in all routes, and starting to see that effect now of EasyJet starting at City of Derry Airport just over a year and a half ago now with their Edinburgh, their Liverpool and their Birmingham routes, really helping the numbers. And looking forward to the Dublin starting as well in 2026, which should see a similar growth between 15 and 25% in total next year as well. So a good couple of years ahead.
Now, where do we stand in sort of looking at the picture over all the years since the airport established? Are we up at record levels, or have we still to get back to sort of those peak times before COVID?
We're heading towards them, Chris. We're not up at record levels yet, but making some good inroads. I think the airport was probably at its best before 2014, when, as you probably know, APD was abolished or went to zero in the Republic of Ireland. And that's seen a real shift change for Irish airports in the south, and Dublin in particular. And their growth compared to the three NI airports. But we're starting to buck the trend a little now, and particularly that Donegal market's really helping us. Their behaviour is actually quite unusual. It's one where if City of Derry doesn't have the routes, they tend to go to Dublin. They're not going to Belfast as their sort of second choice, meaning that a company like EasyJet, who don't have a presence in Dublin, are coming in and getting the market share that they never had before.
So tell us about the current routes that operate out of City of Derry. Where do you serve?
Well, currently we've got London Heathrow three times a day, which has been fantastic. And it's up in the high 80% load factors, ever so popular, particularly with those onward connections internationally. We've got Liverpool. Liverpool will soon be going up from December to six times a week. You'll see that in December, February and March, such as the popularity of it. Manchester also operating is doing equally as well as Liverpool. Liverpool and Manchester are two best routes in terms of the load factor, and London Heathrow is not far behind. We also got Edinburgh, Birmingham and Glasgow, as well as our seasonal stuff like our winter ski to Verona, Lourdes and Medjugorje, the charters, some sports charters, and hoping to bring the summer sun back, I think, in the next year or two. That's more of an ask, but we'll be targeting destinations like Malaga, Tenerife, Palma, Faro, all very popular in the Irish market.
And you're always looking for potential new routes, and to get these new routes, I mean, the whole lead-in process, it can be 2-3 years quite often. Are you optimistic that there will be an expansion of routes in the years to come?
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. And you're right, that lead-in time is at least 18 months when airlines are planning ahead for their schedules. And I think now that we've had EasyJet in particular for a year and a half, nearly 2 years now, that you kind of have to prove yourself and prove that market in the Northwest. And I think we've done admirably in that. So we're in conversations with both EasyJet and Ryanair to what they can do more with this. Always a challenge when they've got aircraft deliveries behind schedule with Airbus and Boeing respectively. So and maybe City of Derry's not always top of the pecking order. Very competitive market. We're not just competing with the other two airports in the north or the Irish airports. You're competing for use of that aircraft anywhere across Europe. But we're in there. We're in the equation, and we're oven ready to go.
Yeah, and you have considerable capacity, I take it, when you look at obviously Belfast International, I think around 6 million passengers a year, Belfast City something near 2.5 million, City of Derry sort of 250,000, but you know, if there are more routes there, you certainly will be able to cope with them.
Oh, indeed. I mean, if you look at just a 35-mile radius from City of Derry Airport, there's over 4 million journeys a year. We're only serving a fraction of that. We can do much better for people, and we just need to try and persuade the airlines away from those traditional hubs and the capitals in particular, and to serve the Northwest much better.
Now, tell us a little bit about the new Dublin route, because we have had routes before, the public service obligation. So there's going to be a subsidy there, and it's certainly, apart from business and tourism, it'll open up all sorts of new avenues for many different sectors. This is going to be a massive boost for the airport. Have we got a definite timeline as to when it's going to start?
You're right. It's going to be a huge boost on all the fronts you just talked about, the connections, the point-to-point for both business and bringing tourism. As you know, nearly 80% of people that come to Ireland come in via Dublin, and been able to improve their itinerary away from a four-hour coach journey in each direction is a huge improvement. And in terms of timing, we're certainly looking in 2026. It's been a tiny bit slow on the legal side, just to decide in which framework the government are going to use for it. But nonetheless, we're confident that it'll be, as soon as the tender is released in the coming days, that the tender will be asked for the whatever operator wins it to deliver it as soon as operationally practical in 2026. So we're hugely looking forward to that and growing the route. And I have no doubt that Dublin to Derry and Derry to Dublin will be the most popular route out of City of Derry Airport.
And what sort of frequency are we talking about? And is it going to be every day of the week?
It'll be every day of the week, and we're talking minimum twice daily will be the stipulation in the tender. And then we'll work with whoever the operator is to see how we can grow that.
And in terms of the actual aircraft, sort of what type of passenger numbers capacity are we talking about?
Well, I guess that's really dependent on who puts in bids for the tender, Chris. But you would imagine the typical regional operators will put in for it, and let's see who else. But certainly we'll have no problem getting the bums on the seats for them.
Yeah. Now I know City of Derry Airport, a claim to fame. You've possibly one of the cheapest car parks of many an airport that I've been in, and that's great. What about connectivity to the airport and getting people to and from there? There's always ways of improving and getting more public transport, better links to bring people there. Is that something you're constantly working on?
That's something that it's probably unfair to say, or I'd be exaggerating if I said constantly. It's something when we get the opportunity, we would often talk about. Of course, you know, it's by road primarily at the moment. As you know, we have a railway track right up against the end of our runway. And we would love to see a halt or a stop. It has been mentioned a couple of times in different revisions of the All-Ireland Rail Review, and we'll take every opportunity to encourage that. And I understand in government circles they're also looking at that, so we would like to improve the rail connection as well. Of course, that may be some way away.
Now, City of Derry Airport, like many other airports, does receive state subsidies, and councils and local authorities involved in different airports, depending what part of the country you're in. But the spin-off effect, not just the numbers employed, but for the whole region, the economic benefits, there's been several studies. I mean, it has a hugely positive effect.
Oh, yeah, very much so. It's listed by Invest Northern Ireland and IDA as an economic asset for the region. When they go out selling the region, they're selling the access, the connectivity via City of Derry Airport to potential investors. So yeah, it's difficult to say. We haven't had an assessment done recently, but it's in the region of at least 50 million plus in terms of that regional GBI or GDP that benefits the region from having City of Derry Airport, and that's only going to grow as the passenger numbers grow.
In some respects, airports, they can be a little bit like hotels. You know, for years they go, maybe they get not a lot happening. And then there's a big spruce up. What's the situation in City of Derry? Is there anything coming down the track in terms of further refurbishment or upgrading?
Well, we certainly keeping it fit for purpose, Chris. That's fair to say, keeping it as fresh as we can. And I would love to have the headache of year-on-year passenger growth where we're looking towards an extension. It is in the sort of, let's call it the 10-year plan or the longer-term plan, but not for 4 or 5 years yet. And, of course, the capital investment is difficult to come by when you're publicly funded. Currently, as you know, we're funded by the Northern Ireland government. And we would dearly love to have the Irish government have further recognition of the fact that we provide connectivity right across the Northwest, regardless of border. And we've asked many times to be part of the regional airports program, but because of the legislative boundaries, that doesn't fit. But I think we would have some healthy discussions to see who could support the airport and its growth, because let's face it, the entire of the Northwest economically benefits. Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to analysing the throughput of traffic, are you able to break down, I'm sure you do some sort of surveying of the passengers, as to what's the percentage? Is it mainly business, leisure, tourism? What way does it break down?
Typically, we're on a 65-35 split overall of 65 leisure, and that leisure includes visiting friends and family. Short trips, and 35% business. However, if you look towards the London Heathrow route, that's estimated closer to a 50-50 split. That access to, obviously, capitals is really important for the business community and that onward connectivity.
And the passengers, obviously Derry, top of the list, but Donegal passengers make up a considerable percentage, Tyrone, Fermanagh. How far does it sort of filter down further south from the airport?
Well, yeah, you're right. Donegal passengers are making up around 40% at the minute. And when you think the Dublin route's not far around the corner, the Dublin route last time, I think, was about a two-thirds split from Donegal versus Derry and other areas. So it could be very soon that there will be more passengers from the Republic of Ireland using City of Derry Airport than there is from the north, which is quite exciting also. But a reiteration of just how much we do right across the northwest, but yeah, you're right. Our catchment is Derry City and Strabane. Let's say call it the district council area, Causeway Coast and Glens, typically, and the Donegal market. So we have a foot in all three camps, and it's serving us very well.
I'm just wondering, thinking out loud here, with the new Dublin service, is there any talk of to get people from City of Derry Airport maybe to Letterkenny? Could there be a bus link, a direct service, or has that been mentioned at all?
It hasn't actually been mentioned apart from yourself, Chris, but I think that's an excellent idea to explore. I think once that route, we can see sight of it and when it's going to start, we should be able to talk to TransLink and their counterparts in Donegal to be able to serve that. And as you said, that connectivity of how people get to the airport is vitally important.
And what about capital investment, be it navigation equipment or the upgrading of the runway or maintenance and things like that? Is there a big budget for that?
I wouldn't call it huge. We're publicly funded, as you know, but we're doing very well. And the council have always stood by us in terms of everything that we need. We're not an airport that does a lot of nice-to-dos, it's fair to say. I'll put my hand up to that. But we keep it fit for purpose. We keep it safe and secure. In the last couple of years, we've invested nearly almost £1 million in the new latest generation cabin baggage equipment. We're just about to invest £1.4 million in the new next generation hold baggage scanning equipment for security. We've just bought a couple of new fire engines, or fire tenders as we call them, in the last year. So we're upgrading in every possible corner where we can. Of course, it tends to be safety and security are the must-dos, and the other things are the nice-to-dos. But we have ambition to grow the terminal as well and improve the facilities in this new world of AI, I think it's fair to say, although we want to keep a fine balance between one of our USPs, which is that close family feel and a very good customer service and cars of our in 10 minutes, as we keep telling everyone, which is quite a unique experience at an airport.
Absolutely. And finally, Steve, if you were granted your wishes, be it 3 years or 5 years' time, just how much potential is there for City of Derry Airport, you think, to grow? Where would you like to be in 5 years' time in terms of routes and additional services?
Well, in 5 years' time, Chris, I would like us to have a steady stream of the seasonal routes that our customers are telling us they want. That's the Malaga, Tenerife, Palma, Faro. I'd love to see a couple of key European destinations on there. Like Amsterdam sticks out like a sore thumb for one we'd like to achieve. But then you've also got your Rome's, your Paris, your Frankfurt. We'd like to increase the frequencies on those Edinburgh, Birmingham, Glasgow, Manchester, up to the same kind of frequencies as we have on the London Heathrow, or at least daily. So there's a lot to do, but it's all achievable. Just given time, as you say, in 5 years it'll be a very different looking airport. And I would hope in 5 years we've doubled the passenger numbers from where we are now. And of course, everything in aviation can take a twist and a turn. World events, as you know, tend to affect aviation harder than any other. And that's like COVID or wars. But with a fair wind, we'll be having a very positive conversations over the next few years.
And that was Steve Fraser, Managing Director of City of Derry Airport. Well, that's it for another edition of the programme. You've been listening to Business Matters here on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Until the next time, may I wish you a healthy, happy and profitable week ahead. Goodbye.
Business Matters is brought to you by Principalize Frosses. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Print Supplies keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies helps save your business time and money. Email sales at printsupplies.ie to find out more.